Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Business Bunker Show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and not the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin, because poor old Jill is not well. And I suspect, I wouldn't like to cast aspersions, but I suspect that she's just trying to get out of giving me a Christmas present, is really what I suspect, because she's laying at home on Twitter, giving it large, filling up my timeline with all of her mates, giving me grief. Anyway, Jules, we hope you get better soon. Hope you're better in time for the Christmas holidays, and we'll see you all sometime in January, hopefully. So in the studio, there's just me and my studio guest, Sarah Drage from Social Enterprise Kent. Sarah, good afternoon.
Hi, Paul. Thank you so much for having me.
It's such a pleasure. We're going to hear from Sarah about the work that Social Enterprise Kent do in the second half of the show. But because Jules isn't here and because our other guest is pre-recorded, she's going to have to work, I'm afraid. But we were having a long chat before we came on air, and I think we got quite a lot to talk about, haven't we, Sarah?
We have indeed.
Yeah, definitely. So we're going to get through all of that. We'd love to hear from you, as always, out there in the great big wide business world. Do tweet me. VanillaWeb is my Twitter handle, and use the hashtag BBunker. We've had quite a few tweets already. But as this is the last show before Christmas, and therefore the last show of 2022, I wanted to say a huge thank you to all the organisations that have sponsored us for the year 2022. They are Lock Associates, We Do Social Media, Telford's Accountants, Talis Independent Financial Advisors, the Tenterton Chamber of Commerce, and DG East Vehicle Services. I want to say a massive thank you to all of those organisations, because without them, we would not be on air. So a huge thank you to all of them and everybody else that has supported us throughout 2022. So there we are. I've got loads of information to give you. I've got loads of tweets coming in. I've got no one to banter with and be rude to, because she's at home in bed. But I'm sure she will tweet with some rudeness soon. But I have got Sarah here, and Sarah's really interesting to listen to as well. So I'm going to kick off with a tweet that we've had from Paragon Drones. And they say, afternoon, gang. We'd love a mention. Thanks. More important, thank you both for a year of banter, business, and, of course, the best tunes. Happy Xmas to you and all of our Business Bunker community. Hashtag cheesy tunes. I've got a cheesy tune for you today, I have to tell you. I've gone left field again, although it's not really left field at all, it's quite obvious really, but we'll get round to that when we get round to it. Right, let me go through what else we've got here. Athel Bray have tweeted, wishing everybody at the Business Bunker and the Kent Business World a happy, peaceful and enjoyable Christmas and New Year. Let's hope 2023 is a good one for all of us. Yeah, we deserve it. We've had a couple of really bad years, haven't we, with this, that and t'other. We won't go into that, though, now. Let's all hope that 2023 sees us out of this and into something better. Athel Bray have also said it's our 25th anniversary. That's business anniversary, I'm guessing. And officially handing over to the next generation. You're going to retire, aren't you? Oh, I'm all jealous now. Oh, so congratulations. I mean, 25 years, that's a brilliant, brilliant achievement. So that's Athel Bray Limited, a training company. And massive, massive well done on 25 years. Enjoy your retirement. I'm sure there'll be a little way of tidying up and tying up loose ends and handing over before you get to relax properly. But that's a fantastic achievement. Well done. What else have we got? Jan Cavell says, wishing everybody at the Business Punk Show a very happy Christmas. Oh, Jules. Oh, she's got off her sick bed to tweet us. Aren't we lucky? She's even tweeted us of a picture with her Santa hat on. Merry Christmas to you all. Have a fabulous New Year 2023 on the Business Bunker. Well, thank you, Jules. We're missing you. She's trying to claim this is the first show she's ever missed in 15 years. I'm a bit dubious about that. I mean, not least of which, she goes on holiday for about 6 weeks a year anyway, all over the place, all of her trips to Africa and everywhere else. The problem now is that my timeline on Twitter is now full up with Jules. I did see another tweet, but I can't find it. Let's see if I can find it. Hold on, so bear with me. Talk amongst yourselves. How's it? It's from Sarah March. I can't find it now. There it is. I got it. Sarah Marsh Collins, down there in Devon. A great lineup with a community feel, perfect for the Business Bunker pre-Christmas show. Support local. Looking forward to the show. And I hope Jules is feeling better soon. Oh, well, thank you, Sarah. That's very kind of you. Oh, here we go. Got another one from Jules. Have a great Business Bunker show. Lovely old vanilla whip. That's me. Sorry not to make our last show of the year. I'll try not to scuff your present. Ah, tweeting from my flu-ridden bed and I'm still sweaty. We didn't need to know that, did we? We did not need to know that. But she sent me a picture, but it's a weird kind of picture. It says... It's a piece of wrapping paper. So it could be anything, you know. She could have just wrapped a cushion, couldn't she? And then it looks to me like she's cut the bottom off a Christmas card and then written on it to make it look like a label. Not like I'm cynical or anything here. It says to Paul, ho ho ho, love Jules. But she's eaten it, whatever it was. You're a big fibber, Jules. I know what she would have bought me. She would have bought me licorice because I'm a licorice maven. Ooh. But she won't eat it because she doesn't like licorice. So she hasn't eaten it, really. Yeah, she's just fibbing. I reckon she didn't buy me anything. I reckon that she's just thrown a sickie because she couldn't think of anything. But I've eaten her present. Right. I did get loads more tweets, but I can't find them at the moment, so I'll come back to them when I've found them. I want to tell you about this. A historic pub has been saved after villagers raised more than £300,000 to save it. Residents in Betherston, near Ashford, rose to the challenge of raising the staggering figure before Christmas in order to save and reopen the George. It's a 300-year-old freehouse, described by many as the heart of the village, and it was closed during the pandemic and the building was put up for sale. Fearing the historic building could be demolished or transformed, a group of like-minded residents came together to form the George Community with the aim of raising enough money to reopen the pub as a community asset. So they've raised £500,000 one way or the other and bought the pub, and they're now turning it into a community venue, which is a fantastic thing to do. And I do happen to know it. It's opposite the church in Betherston. It's right in the middle of the village. So what a fantastic thing to do. And they've done really well. So they raised £300,000 and they were pledged, I think, by Kent County Council, the other £200,000 to make it happen. That's brilliant. Well done.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I'd love to know their fundraising strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. They probably offered free drinks or something. Yeah. So that's Betherston. You're in Greatstone, aren't you?
I am. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Greatstone on the marsh.
Yeah, lovely. Have you been there long, Sarah?
8 years now.
Wow. Okay.
Quite long.
Are you a Kent girl originally?
No, I'm a Yorkshire girl.
Yorkshire?
Yorkshire.
I tell you
what.
I've
got a bit of an accent.
Oh, I tell you what, you are so lucky that Jules isn't here. Otherwise, we'd have had Timmy Taylor's, clogs, whippets. We would have had the whole gamut of every Yorkshire meme going. So you kind of got away with it.
I'm a Yorkshire lass.
Yeah, but you don't sound it. You've kind of lost your accent.
So I've lost my accent, but when I talk to my mum,
When you go home, you become all broad.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. It feels unnatural to talk in a southern accent to my family.
Right.
So it'll be, hey, yep. Mum, you're right, Mum.
Get that with it out. Eh?
Yeah. Or when I get really stroppy, it comes out.
Oh, does it? Yeah.
That's when my husband knows I mean business. Uh-huh. When the Yorkshire accent comes out, he goes, oh, you are angry.
Cool. Okie doke. Maidstone Borough Council have committed to deliver 1,000 affordable homes. Maidstone Borough Council has commenced an ambitious project to build 1,000 new affordable homes in the borough and has started to make positive strides to achieve this. NBC recognises the need for more affordable housing in the area and is determined that those in the local community who may not be able to afford to buy or rent privately have the opportunity to live in one of these new homes. In order to achieve this, the council has recently made 3 appointments to external consulting team, all of which will now work together over the coming years to take forward a variety of development projects. The firms appointed by Maidstone Borough Council are BPTW Architects, Calford Seedon as the employer's agent, That's quantity surveying, project management, clerk of works, principal designers, and Red Lofters, the housing development consultants. These three firms were appointed through a rigorous procurement process and have already started to work with Maidstone Borough Council on a range of exciting development opportunities. The intended benefits of working with the same three firms for the duration of the programme is to achieve a partnering ethos over the coming years, continuous improvement on a project-by-project basis to maximise innovation to include the realising the potential of modern methods of construction, as well as achieving the best overall value for the council. The 1,000 affordable homes will be part of the overall Maidstone housing target, which has been set by the government, and it's not over or above that. Enabling infrastructure is one of the four priorities of Maidstone Borough Council, and this project reflects that. If you want to find out more about it, there's a website all about it, maidstone.gov.uk/stay connected. That's maidstone.gov.uk/stay connected. That's a really interesting development. We do need affordable housing, especially in the southeast. Because the cost of housing in the southeast is somewhat stupid, to say the least. So everything like that helps. But I have to say, I currently live in Tenterton. I say currently because I'm thinking of moving. But I currently live in Tenterton, and they are building houses all around me, which is lovely. I don't have any problem with that. What I do have a problem with is they're not putting any more infrastructure in. So the roads are clogged up. You can't get a doctor's appointment. There are no school places. I've got a 10-year-old stepdaughter that can't get a school place. And we need to do something about that before, well, alongside building houses. It's okay building houses, but people have got to go somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and that's the problem. I find, Sarah, I don't know about you. Do you have children?
I do. I have two little girls.
Do you?
And I agree with you. I do agree with you. Mm. I think that, yeah, there definitely needs to be more infrastructure.
Yeah.
Doctors especially.
Yeah. You know, it's, I'm sure that they're aware of it, but it's one thing taking a field and putting some houses on it. It's not quite so easy to extend roads and build schools and build doctors' surgeries and all the other things that you need to sustain a community. But we do need them. We do need to sustain these communities. Otherwise, the whole thing falls apart. Well, I'm just trying to catch up. What's on in Kent? Hold on. What's on in Kent have tweeted me. Hold on. Sorry, it's difficult to... again, they're flying in, these things, and Twitter throws them off the top of the screen, and I see them as they go through, and I think I'm going to read that, and then it's gone, and I have to go back and look for it. And Twitter's not helping a great deal with this. It's Christmas week. All of our teams are excited for Christmas. Hope everyone has got all their presents ready, or is anyone in need of some last-minute presents. If you're looking for a Christmas events, download our app and check it out. There's lots going on in the county. So that's what's on in Kent, and it's a free downloadable app. I recommend you get it. I've got it on my phone. It's really useful. It tells you everything that's going on. You know, if you've got kids that you want to take out at holiday times and stuff like that, as well as all kinds of other events, it's brilliant. There's loads of good stuff on it. So do check that out. What else have we got here? Twitter's been a real pain at the moment. It's they keep messing with it so that your timeline doesn't show in the order that people put it in, and then it doesn't help when my timeline is completely clogged up with Jules yakking. Why she has to include me in all of her yakking, I don't know, but she does, and then people reply with me in it as well. Oh, look, I've now got a picture of a bowl of food. What is she eating?
Is that ice cream?
It looks like it, doesn't it? It looks like, to me, it looks like a pear and some blueberries and ice cream and custard. She says, I'm sweating.
Having a temperature is a great excuse to eat some ice cream, isn't it?
No, she's tweeted this picture of a bowl of fruit and stuff with custard and ice cream all over it. And she says, she's run out of remedies. I've got no appetite. What are you doing with it then? If you've got no appetite, what are you going to do? Flick it at the dog. Blimey.
Oh, the dog will be grateful. Mine would anyway.
Yeah. She's got a rescue greyhound.
Oh.
Yeah. Called Maisie or something. Macy. Something like that. Anyway, there's a Women in Business Mastermind Roundtable by Honor Dog Walk Events. That's Sue and Deb. And they say, start your 2023 with a to-you list. Women in Business Mastermind Roundtable event followed by wine tasting and a three-course lunch. And that's at the Balfour Winery, Five Oak Lane, Staplehurst, on the 2nd of February. 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. If you want to find out more about that, if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar, all of these events can be found there in greater detail. And there's also a link to book what you want to do.
I remember when What's On in Kent was a paper form.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. We used to have quite a few. There was a chap called Chris Ashdown that used to run Kent Gigs, which started off as a paper and then went online. And that was a big, big, big thing for a long time. And then sadly, Chris passed away a couple of years ago and nobody took it up. And I can't believe that nobody carried it on. It just faded away.
I remember that as well. That's
it was really popular. It was really popular. And it just faded away when poor old Chris passed away. Hiring an apprentice is a great way for your business to develop a talented, motivated and skilled workforce. Government funding is available to help cover apprenticeship training and assessment costs. There are a range of funding options available. In some cases, the government fully funds the apprenticeship training and assessment costs. Your business could also get £1,000 for taking on an apprentice who is either aged 16 to 18 years old or age 19 to 25 years old and has an education, health and care plan or has been in the care of their local authority. If your apprentice is under 25, you may also be exempt from paying Class 1 national insurance contributions. If you want to find out more, and you do, I suggest you do want to find out more because we need to get more people into the workforce. We have 1.2 million unfilled job vacancies. And we are desperate for people. And unless the business community starts training new ones, we're going to run out very quickly. So if you go to apprenticeships.gov.uk/employers-funding-an-apprenticeship. Let me give you that again. It's www.apprenticeships.gov.uk/employers-funding-an-apprenticeship. Right. Cheesy tunage is what we've got. In a moment, we're going to hear from Pam Locke. Pam is the chief executive of Locke Associates. They're a specialist employment law firm that specialise in employment law, HR and health and wellbeing. And Pam and I'm telling you this because it's relevant to what I'm about to play as a piece of cheesy tunage, which you're going to hate. You're going to really hate, I guarantee it. Is Pam and I started off talking about Christmas parties, so I thought it was only appropriate we should play. Sorry. Sorry about that. Had to happen. A bit of Slade, a bit of Noddy. It's interesting, actually. A couple of weeks ago, on the show, we had Phil Wilson, who's the drummer from Mud, the old 70s glam rock band. And he was telling us about Dave Hill from Slade, how he goes everywhere with a bottle of Tabasco sauce in his pocket, which he smothers everything in Tabasco sauce before he eats it, which was interesting, which probably accounts for his fringe, doesn't it? Anyway, that was an old classic, Slade. We had to play it. It's that time of year. Sorry about that. But I caught up a couple of days ago with Pam Locke of Locke Associates, and we talked about a range of issues, but we started off talking about the ubiquitous Christmas party. Let's hear what Pam had to say.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome once again onto the Business Bunker Show, Pam Locke. Pam is from Locke Associates, employment law, HR and wellbeing specialist. Pam, good afternoon. Welcome back on the show.
Thanks very much, Paul. It's great to be here.
It's always lovely to have you on, and we always find something interesting to talk about. And of course, it's that time of year again, isn't it? It's the old Christmas party time. And I guess this is the first year for a couple of years when a lot of us will be physically going to parties again so I kind of wanted to touch base with where we are in terms of Christmas parties and stuff like that. I mean, in my day in corporate 1980s, it was carnage, and I'd spend, as a senior executive, I'd spend the whole of January and February dealing with the outfall. But I guess things have moved on. I hope things have moved on a lot since then. But what are your views on successful Christmas parties and the kind of issues that we need to look out for?
Well, you'd be surprised to hear then that things are still similar to what it was in the 80s, but perhaps not at the same volume. But right, we still encounter issues from Christmas events and just office events generally. And what we've noticed is that COVID rears its head again, because obviously, you know, you've got new members of staff that have joined. Mm. You may never have encountered them at a social event, and you don't know how they behave. So, you know, you might have quite a lot of unknown entities, shall we call it, that are attending these events. You also need to really think ahead. Now, obviously, it's not, I mean, this is relevant if you haven't organised your party yet, but also for next year if you're doing events. You need to think about being inclusive, you know, because I think the workplace is such a much more diverse environment. Yeah. With people who are working flexibly, people from different race, religion, their views on drinking alcohol might be different. So I think you've got to really think in a wider sort of base than just simply thinking, right, let's have the office party. Mm. And think really about how, you know, what format it's going to take, what are the issues that you might encounter, and try and head them off. And obviously, you know, the big thing remains that if it's a work-related event, then you as an employer are ultimately going to be responsible for the acts of your employees, or indeed third-party contractors that you might have invited along.
Sure.
So you do need to be very careful. You need to make sure that, you know, that you've got your policies in place, but you also train staff to understand what is acceptable and not acceptable behaviour, not just at parties, but generally. Mm. And that's often something that businesses fail to do. They have a policy, but they don't ever train their staff. And of course, the staff will rarely read the policy until the event occurs. So I think there's quite a few things you need to think about. And, you know, and I think, you know, there are some businesses that are putting together, you know, codes of conduct around company events. So it sets out very clearly what their expectations are.
Yeah.
And that might be an approach you might want to take. But I mean, I think you've got to think about your organisation, what works. Because simply actually, you know, explaining to staff, you know, in a sort of a more jocular way, shall we say, about what's expected might be the right thing in a smaller organisation where you've got a small team of staff, or you've got smaller teams where you've got a team leader that can sort of have a conversation saying, right, lads, you know, we're obviously still a work-related event, so, you've got to behave in a particular way. There's ways and means of achieving the same outcome, but I think you've got to think carefully about how you do it and what you do.
Absolutely. I mean, it can be a bit of a minefield now, and I'm very aware of what you just said about the diversity of workforces these days, and even the type of the type of event we plan, I think, needs to be thought through quite a lot more than we would have done once upon a time. It just so happens that I'm teetotal, for instance. So, but it doesn't bother me, you know. I'll go to a pub. I don't have a problem with that. But there are some people, for moral, religious, cultural reasons, don't like to be near alcohol. So, you're going to stage a boozy party. You could be alienating some of your staff straight off just by inviting them to a boozy party.
And even things like age. I mean, you've got age limits on bars. You know, I've got young members of staff that wouldn't be able to go into certain bars. Right. You know, because they're too young.
Yeah.
You're right. I think it's changed. That needs to change. If you're not changed already, that is something you've got to think about. Is it's not just simply doing the same old thing. You've got to think about your workforce and actually, you know, how diverse they are, and also, as I say, that, you know, that includes age as well as sort of religion and race, etc.
Yeah, I did see something the other day which kind of made me smile, and I at the time I thought of you when I heard it, because it was exactly in line with this. I saw it on social media somewhere where somebody said, "Oops, my boss, who is Jewish, gave one of the members of staff a hamper as a Christmas present with a lump of ham in it, and the staff member was Muslim."
Oh, no.
Stood there looking at each other and kind of shrugged and just gave it to somebody else. And you just see, blimey.
And I'm quite certain there was best intentions and all that. There wasn't any sort of, you know.
There wasn't any malice. It was just
yeah. Very dangerous nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. And from a business owner's point of view, as you say, with a smaller business, I think you probably know your staff well enough to be able to make some decent judgments about what the best thing to do is. So, for instance, we had our Christmas party at Fruitworks two nights ago, and we just bought in some pizza and some beer because we know that the people there like a beer, and had some quizzes and stuff like that. And it was something that had a time limit on it, so we ended at a reasonable time. If everybody then wanted to take themselves off to the pub or whatever, they were perfectly entitled to do that. But with a larger organisation, you may not know your people as well, and I think that's where you really got to start thinking about what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing is, you know, there's possibly less of this nowadays, but there are still some organisations that organise events with partners attending.
Yeah.
And again, that's another potential problem area, because again, you don't know the partners and how they behave. So I think, you know, I mean, I've certainly come across situations where a partner's made some comment, not necessarily a sexually inappropriate comment, but a comment, and it's upset somebody, and they've come into the office and made some comments, and then, you know, the organisation basically took the view, that's it, no more partner events, it's just too risky. So it does happen. And I think, look, let's not get, I don't want to be the Grinch, because actually I am a big fan of Christmas parties. I think they're a great thing to do, because it's a good way of bringing people together and everybody's generally in a jolly mood. Yeah. And, you know, it's a good morale booster. And I'm using it as an opportunity, because we've got quite a lot of remote staff. We've got staff working in different offices, to bring them all together, mix them up into little teams, and we're having sort of little party games.
Yeah.
Obviously, again, I'm giving a lot of thought to what the party games should be, because I've got to take into account physical differences.
You're not playing Twister or anything.
It's so difficult being an employment lawyer and being a business owner at the same time. But, you know, hopefully it'll be fun. I'm still trying to keep the fun element, because that's what, you know, that's, and it's a nice, and I think people still appreciate it. And you know, we certainly have had a few comments about staff saying that they know other people, friends, that they're, you know, businesses are not doing office parties or any Christmas events, and they're quite disappointed by it. So they're actually quite pleased that we're doing it. They see it as a really good thing for us to be doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there has been a lot of cultural change. I remember as a kid, my dad, bless him, he had his own small building firm. And every year at Christmas, he used to go wild, you know, giving presents to his major customers.
Yeah.
You know, normally bottles of scotch or whatever, or a box of cigars or something. Yeah. And of course, all of that came to a grinding halt, certainly from a corporate point of view. You know, I remember back in the day for me, we got missives from management saying you're not allowed to accept any presents from anyone. If somebody tries to give them to you, you have to hand them into a central location and we'll, you know, just... So, you know, culture has changed quite a lot as well.
Yeah. I mean, that was the Bribery Act that changed things.
Yeah.
And then obviously we've got... We're regulated as well as solicitors, so we've got quite a lot of heavy regulation on our activities, let's put it that way. And, you know, and that does also extend to our behaviour at work events. I mean, there's been quite a few solicitors that have ended up in disciplinary tribunals with the potential of being struck off. Some of them have been for their activities, you know, and drinking, you know, at events where young members and more junior members events of solicitors at events. And so... There's also the regulatory side that's got tighter. There's a law, as you say, about the Bribery Act that's made it more difficult to gift something to someone at Christmas or any time of the year, to be honest. Yeah. And I mean, we've taken the view this year also because of the cost of living crisis that we didn't think it would be appropriate to give people something because I think they'd actually appreciate donations to charity that would benefit more from it. Yeah. And we did think about doing something like Nourish, but actually... We've been personally touched, quite a number of us, by relatives and also colleagues that are terminally ill with cancer. So we actually thought we're going to donate to cancer research and Macmillan nurses on the basis that it's in recognition it's something that's actually very personal to us and we want to try and make a change. So that's what we've done. And I think a lot of businesses are taking that approach this year. So there's a shift, as you say, culturally. There's a shift that's sort of been imposed on us to some extent by... changes in the environment in which we're working in.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the big takeaway from this is think about what you're doing. When you're staging a party, think about inclusiveness. Does it suit everybody? Are you going to alienate anyone? I mean, and at the end of the day, there's no harm in you asking people, is there, that says, you know, if we did this kind of party, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think that's something that there's not enough of is staff engagement surveys. And they don't have to be massively complicated, you know, and we did do that. We asked people what they'd like to do. And then next year, what we're doing is we're actually splitting our us into little teams. And actually, there'll be teams of 4 or 5, maybe 6, where they can all take on the role of actually organising an event. So we'll do a quarterly event and they'll all have the opportunity. But you do need to sort of supervise, I guess, is also something else. And that means active supervision at the event.
Yeah.
So keeping an eye out for things that, you know, maybe somebody might not look particularly happy. Maybe that's because somebody said something to them they're not happy about. You know, making sure that, you know, you're just sort of... monitoring the situation. Yeah. So that does mean that you need to have somebody that's not partaking in too much alcohol. Yeah. Now, somebody's gone as, I know some businesses have gone as far as having a sort of, you know, somebody is actually almost like a designated driver. They're sort of the designated sort of monitor. And they're actually, basically the person that's going to, you know, spend the night just watching everything, which I think possibly is just taking it a bit step too far.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think you need to go to that extent. I think you just need some sensible people that are, you know, keeping an eye on things that are happening and just making sure. Because you might, as I say, you might have somebody that's not actually been in the office very much suddenly coming out and just getting a little bit carried away with the alcohol. And
yeah, absolutely. You know. And again, as you say, because especially where we are now, your colleagues at work might not know each other very well.
Yeah.
So you know... The old office banter is okay if you know someone really well. If you don't, then you've got to be a lot more careful.
Absolutely. And people do perceive things in different ways. You know, as you know, the intention may not be there, but you know, because they don't know you, they don't know how that was intended to come across either. So I think there's a lot more aspects to this you now need to consider, basically.
Yeah, so we need to think about what we're doing and plan accordingly. I think that's really good. I just want to touch on now, if I may, 2023, which is fast approaching, and I think there's a few employment law things coming down the pike that we need to really think about. So maybe give us a bit of an update on that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we've had the employment bill that's been sitting around since 2019. And the government keeps on saying, we'll do it, we'll process, you know, we'll push it through once we get parliamentary time. But obviously, there's been a few things coming along that have taken up their time. In the numerous changes of Prime Minister, for example.
Yeah, every week. Yeah.
Well, we have got a little bit of stability now. So we're now beginning to see some movement. So we're not going to see the employment bill in its entirety being implemented. What we're seeing are private members' bills that are coming through and chopping it up. Right. And putting it into sort of smaller chunks of legislation, some of which is very much supported by the government, which means it's likely to be pushed through much quicker. So these are the ones that I'm going to focus in on. Yeah. So in 2023, we're anticipating that we're going to see the changes in flexible working rights being implemented. And that was announced a couple of weeks ago. The government said that they were backing it and they are going to be implementing it. So that's going to mean that you're going to have the requirement for employees at the moment to explain, you know, how their flexible working application would work. In other words, it's not going to cause significant issues for the business. They no longer need to set out their case for it. They're also going to allow employees to make two flexible working requests every 12 months instead of one that's current. And it's also going to require the employers to consult with the employee before they refuse the application. So that's a requirement that's going to be placed on the employers to actually say, you know, why, or consult with them as to why they're not going to agree to it.
Right.
And they're going to reduce the deadline for employers to make the decisions and go through the process of appeals from 3 months to 2 months. So there's a little bit more onus on employers. And this is also going to be likely to become a day one right. At the moment, it's only applicable to employees that have got 26 weeks continuous service. So it's just going to introduce more onus on employers. There has been some negative reaction in the press already. James Dyson, I think he's called, he's objected to it and says he thinks it's not the right thing for businesses. But it's certainly something that has been on the cards for quite a while. And as I say, I think it's likely to come through.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, and it's interesting that you raised James Dyson's objections to it. The question I was going to put to you is: it's not flexible working isn't mandatory, but you have to give a reason why you are not accepting it in this particular moment. Is it possible by doing that? Are you making a global statement or an individual statement? What I mean is, there could be some people in your organisation that you go, yeah, fine, you can work flexibly. But like with Dyson, I'm assuming he's going, but we make things. You can't do that at home. you've got to come into a factory to do that. So depending on the type of business you're in, some of your employees could work flexibly and some couldn't. So when you make a decision, is that decision global that says you can all work flexibly or none of you can? Or can you make it an individual level?
So you can you base your decision on what position you're in at that time as a business.
Right.
So for example, we encounter situations where you might have, you know, a team of 10 and you might have 8 working flexibly and 2 were working full time and that worked fine. But then maybe one of them has gone off maternity leave and then they make an application to work flexibly. You've got to look at the situation. Can you afford to have another one person working flexibly? Well, the answer in that scenario might be no.
Right.
So, you know, unfortunately, it comes down to timing. You know, that person, had they been earlier in the group, then they would have got it, but it doesn't suit the business at this time. But the business has got to be able to defend that and rely on 1 of 8 reasons under the legislation as to why they're rejecting that request. And one of them is, service delivery. There's lots of others that you can usually drop it into. The one thing you've got to be careful about is it's not just about flexible working rights in terms of the flexible working regulations. It's also around sex discrimination as well when you're in that scenario. So you've got to be careful that you don't fall foul of the sex discrimination legislation as a result of rejecting the request. So there's a number of things that you need to think about. So I think it's always safest to get expert advice if you're concerned about it.
Yeah.
Just to make sure you don't fall foul, because prevention is always better than the cure. But the short answer is, you need to be careful. You need to avoid discriminating against someone by rejecting their request but accepting somebody else. But there are 8, you know, quite broad grounds on which you can reject the request. You've just got to be able to justify why you've rejected it.
Yeah, and for me, I 100% agree. You know, getting professional expert opinion and advice on these things is a form of insurance, as far as I'm concerned. You know, again, I think by the pure act of actually going and asking someone externally to help you make those decisions probably eases that decision from a legal point of view, if you see what I mean. You know, so if somebody said, right, I'm taking you to a tribunal, you know, and you end up in a tribunal, you go, but we did try really hard to to get expert opinion on this because we wanted to do the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's that's very much the case. You can sort of, you know, obviously it's not going to necessarily be your defence, your entire defence, but it shows that you are actually, you were given the request serious consideration, which is important because that's what you're supposed to do. And again, if you ultimately, it's your decision as an employer and you will have to stand up, but you can say that you took advice on it and you thought you were making the right decision. And that will carry some sway as well. I mean, there's no doubt we're definitely living in a more litigious world. And a lot of we offer employment tribunal insurance, and we find the take up on it isn't that high because most organisations think it'll never happen to them. And actually, what you're better doing is getting it at the rates that are cheaper now because you've not had the incidents happen to you because it's going to be more expensive when this happened.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I think, you know, again, going back, prevention is better, but at the same time, there's ways in which you can insure yourself just in case something goes awry.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, you're not then in a situation where you've got this unknown amount of money, because in a tribunal situation, it's each party bears their own costs. And you rarely get cost orders. We do get them sometimes, but you know, it's a cost that you don't need to add on to your business.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've told you once before, in my very early days in business, I ended up in an employment tribunal, which I unbelievably won on a technicality, but I didn't get any of my costs back. And I'd spent a year paying legal fees and all the rest of it, which came to a significant amount of money. So my win was a moral win, not a financial one.
I mean, I mean, we do our best to try and keep our clients out of tribunal because we know it's a no-win situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Either party.
Yeah, yeah.
And nobody wants to be, as you'll know, it can be very, very stressful going through it.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, it can't be avoided, unfortunately.
Yeah. Anything else we need to think about, Pam?
So, yeah, a couple other things. We've got carers leave bill, which is going through. Again, it's sponsored by the government. And that gives carers 1 week's unpaid leave a year to care for a dependent with a long-term care need. So that's anyone that's got an illness or injury, it's likely to last more than 3 months, or if they've got a disability or they require care connected to their old age. And again, that's going to be a day one right as well. So that's 1 week's unpaid leave that's going to be available. And that's sometime 2023 that's likely to come through. We've also got the worker protection bill that's coming through. Now, you might remember a few years ago, and we're talking about 2013, there was legislation in place that made employers liable for the acts of third parties. And organisations like McDonald's started putting signs up on their walls, basically saying, you know, we won't tolerate harassment and discrimination of our staff, etc.
Yeah.
Well, the government then changed their mind about that and repealed that piece of legislation. But they've now decided they're going to change it again. So it is likely we're going to see, and again, this is another private bill, but we're going to see this one going through, and it's going to give additional protection for employees from being harassed by third parties.
Right.
So that you know, you're just back in that situation where, again, you need to think carefully about your staff's exposure to other parties and what you've done to protect them. And it is going to mean that you've got to think ahead because they're going to make it an obligation. You're going to have to be able to evidence that you've taken the steps, and it's not just sort of, it's going beyond what it was before. It's showing that you've taken all reasonable steps, which is quite wide. Now, of course, that might change by the time it becomes an act, but that's where it's at the moment. Interestingly, the government has rejected the potential for extending protection for interns and volunteers. And their argument is that interns should actually be classified as workers, and workers are protected already from harassment under the Equality Act. Volunteers do not have any protection at the moment from being unlawfully discriminated against under the legislation, current legislation. And this bill was looking to potentially extend the protection so volunteers could bring unlawful discrimination claims and be protected from harassment and victimisation. But the government said, no, we don't want to do that. We don't think that volunteers need that additional protection. And the other thing that is likely to happen is at the moment, you've got to bring a claim within 3 months, less a day from the date of the incident. So it was harassment, you know, 3 months from the date you were harassed. That's going to be changed. That's going to be extended probably most likely to about 6 months.
Okay.
And that could have a big impact because you've got a lot of people sometimes who are exposed to an act of discrimination, they're harassed, and they don't feel capable of bringing the claim immediately. Yeah. There might also be other incidents that have taken place, and it might well be it's longer than 3 months at the moment. So actually, if they extend the deadline, then it's going to actually have an impact, or the time limits, it's going to have an impact on potentially more claims coming through. I mean, we've certainly seen more complaints being made about harassment, without a doubt, since hashtag MeToo.
I guess there could be a cumulative effect by stretching it out. You know, something might happen where people go, oh, I'm not really sure about that, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. And then in a month's time, a similar thing happens or something. You go, oh, hold on a minute, this is getting a bit, you know. So I can see that. I can see why they would push that out a bit to give people, you know, time to think about it. So you don't have to react straight away to the very first thing that happened to you. You can think about it and see if it was, you know, a pattern, whether it was meant, you know, if so. So I get that. Pam?
And then, yeah. I was just going to say the final thing is the government is still putting on hold its statutory code of practice on fire and rehire practices.
Right.
Which is all, you know, there's been a few instances. Well, P&O was probably your most renowned case, but they've put that on hold. So I'm not sure we'll see that coming through in 2023.
Yeah, without being too cynical, I think the government themselves realise that they could be in trouble with their employment regulations themselves more than anyone else, because they tend to be the worst at doing that, or the best at doing that, depending on what your point of view is.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, to be honest, I think the focus is going to be more on the changes that they're planning to implement to protect businesses when organisations when strikes are declared.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be a bigger focus on trying to push through legislation to, you know, make sure that businesses can still operate. I mean, there's already been some changes that have taken place to allow temporary agency workers or temps to be brought in when there's a strike to enable the work to continue. I think the government is trying to push through legislation to basically prevent strikers going out in their entirety, so there's at least a minimum number of people that are still working in the organisation to provide, you know, key operations. So things like public services are likely to see, you know, legislation coming in that imposes that on them.
Absolutely. Pam, thank you so much for all of that. That update is really useful, and it's really helpful to hear your advice and thoughts on all of these things. Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show. I'd like to wish you, your family and your colleagues a Merry Christmas and a healthy and successful 2023.
Become part of our community to build your social media habits with workouts. Increase your brand's presence and engagement. Go to wedosocialmedia.co.uk to register for 2 free social media workouts every Wednesday. 10:30 a.m. Facebook and 11:30 a.m. LinkedIn.
Talis Independent Financial Advisors can help you invest, organise your pensions, and even get you the best possible life insurance, mortgage, or equity release deal. Check out talisifa.com.
Jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
Locke Associates Group. Let us look after all your people needs so you can focus on growing your business. No long-term tie-ins, just responsive, commercially minded support. Find us at lochassociates.co.uk.
Welcome back. That was Pam Locke of Locke Associates. And we talked there two different things. We talked about Christmas parties and all the goings on with that. And then we looked at some of the up-and-coming new regulations in 2023. But just coming back to the Christmas party scene, I've got Sarah Drage with me. Sarah is from Social Enterprise Kent, but I happen to know she's got a little sideline going in her own charity, and she also is quite passionate about helping people with alcohol problems, which is kind of apposite in terms of parties, isn't it? As I was saying to Pam during that interview, Sarah, back in the 80s in the corporate world, Christmas parties were carnage. I mean, people drunk all over the place. I was a senior manager in an investment bank, and I used to spend months afterwards sorting out the outcome of that. I mean, have you got any thoughts about the party scene and how people, especially people that are trying to stay away from alcohol, cope with it?
Yeah, I think it's a really difficult subject area. I think alcohol is enmeshed in our everyday lives.
Yeah,
I think it's socially acceptable. Mm. It's everywhere you go.
Yeah,
and I think if you don't drink at a party, then you're almost outcasted.
Absolutely,
shunned, aren't you? It's almost like, oh, what? What is this? But I'm really passionate about this. I lost my dad, sadly, as you know, to alcohol use disorder back in 2017. And there's a massive stigma attached to it. A huge stigma for not drinking and a huge stigma for going too far with it.
Yeah.
It's a legal, highly, highly addictive substance, which causes physical dependence. And once somebody gets hooked on it, you've got no choice but to carry on drinking until you can get support.
I don't know if you notice this, but as a teetotal person myself, obviously I don't drink alcohol, but I go to parties and I'll go to the pub and all kinds of things, and all my friends and family all drink. What's interesting is I don't think people realise how quickly alcohol affects them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because people go, oh, no, you know, I've only had a couple of pints. But as someone that doesn't drink, I can sit there and just after a pint of beer or, a glass of wine, people start, you can see their personality change and they start to slur their words and things like that. And they don't realise they're doing it. But as someone that's stone cold sober, I can see it straight away. And you say to people, you've had quite a lot. No, I haven't. I can cope with much more than that. And you think, you can't even cope with what you've had. Yeah, it changes you. I don't want to be a curmudgeon about it, but you're right. And again, as someone that's teetotal, the amount of people that try to cajole me into drinking when I don't want to, it's nobody's business. But I do get the other side of the coin, though, which is I get invited to a lot of parties because they know I'm going to drive home.
Yes, there's a benefit there, isn't
there?
Yeah.
Do you want to come to a party with me, Paul? Yeah, yeah. Oh, you don't mind picking me up, do you?
I think, do you know what? There's a campaign from Alcohol Change UK, one of the leading alcohol charities, and they have a campaign called #StopSoberShaming.
Yeah.
And it's basically that, to stop people from questioning why somebody wouldn't want to have a drink and peer pressuring them into having a drink. Because there's lots of reasons why somebody might not choose to drink alcohol. And there's loads of reasons why.
Yeah.
And one of them might be that somebody just doesn't want to.
Yeah.
And what I find the double standard, which is what I advocate against, and that's the people are kind of peer pressured to have a drink, but when they go too far, they're stigmatized for that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's almost like you're encouraged to do it, but when you go too far, bearing in mind everybody metabolizes alcohol differently.
Yeah.
We all handle it differently and it causes physical dependence. When it goes too far, it's, oh, you can't handle your drink. Oh, you're this or you're that, which is...
I tell you the other thing that makes me laugh a little bit as well is people... Because I'm quite a big bloke and I'm quite a forceful bloke, so I'm hard to bully. Yeah, so people go and have a drink. Oh, no, and don't ask me again. Yeah, because I've just told you no, I don't want it. Then they'll go, have a non-alcoholic beer. Why would I want to do that?
Yeah.
Well, there's this whole thing. Yeah, but you can have non-alcoholic wine now. You can have non-alcoholic spirits. I can have Coke as well, or I can have orange juice. You know, why are you telling me this?
Yeah.
And the thinking is, you need to have something that looks like alcohol, even if it isn't.
Yeah, you're right.
Why do I need that? It tastes like poo. Yeah.
Do you know what? The way I look at it is, would you pressure somebody to smoke?
Yeah.
If somebody doesn't smoke, you don't say, oh, go on, just have one. Go on, don't be
just
boring.
Have a puff.
Just have one. Yeah. You don't pressure somebody to smoke. Mm. Alcohol kills just as many people as cigarettes does.
Yeah.
And the wider effects of alcohol on other people, that like the indirect effects,
yeah, absolutely,
as well. So, I think there's a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, you know, and I've got nothing against people that like to drink. I mean, there's no way you're going to stop it because alcohol is endemic in our society, in all societies. But it is interesting for those of us that don't drink how people try to kind of drag you into their world, unless there's a motive for not doing that, which is, can I have a lift home?
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, cool. Good. Okay. We've got a couple of minutes before we join the Channel Radio newsroom. When we come back after the news, we're going to talk to Sarah about the work she's doing with Social Enterprise Kent. And they've got a fantastic project that they're working on at the moment. Well, they work on loads of fantastic projects, but they've got yet another fantastic project they're working on. And we're going to hear all about that in the second half of the show. Do keep your tweets coming in. I will find them eventually. Tweet me at VanillaWeb and use the hashtag BeBunker. I've got quite a few emails and things to read out as well. So there's lots of things going on. I'll tell you what, let me just see if I can quickly catch up with my emails, with my tweets. I trust assurance. I'm dreaming of a right Christmas. If you'd like to know how we can help your organisation, email info@itrust.uk.com or visit our website, itrust.uk.com. iTrust is the speak up app. It's for making a difference. It's for communicating at work and whistleblowing, I guess, is the thing. Fantastic app and a great, great service. It really helps people communicate on difficult subjects. Yeah. And that could bring us right back to alcohol as another subject. I tell the story quite often of many years ago. I was a VP in a bank and I was sent on senior management training for vice presidents, and we had to do role plays. And one of the role plays was confronting a member of staff that we suspected of having an alcohol problem.
Right.
And as a role play, most of us were going, "You're right, everything okay," all that kind of stuff. And there was a chap from the Johannesburg office, and they were showing the films of the role play afterwards. And the chap from the Johannesburg office was sat there. The actor playing the supposed drunk came in, went to sit down. He went, "I don't know what you're going to do." He said, "But you're not sitting down because you're a drunk. You're out. Clear off." Oh, and that was it. And we all went, "You can't do that." "Yeah, I can."
Oh,
great. Anyway, listen, let's join the Channel Radio newsroom. When we come back, we're going to talk to Sarah. Let's do it.
This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.